My first guest of the second hour is with me now. She is Miri Eisen, retired IDF colonel and senior fellow at the International Institute for Counterterrorism. Miri, thank you for being with me on Chai FM this afternoon.
As always, a pleasure, and I'm going to apologize for my slightly toady voice. I have a little bit of a cold.
You got a little bit of a cold. I couldn't even get the words out properly. Well, at least you're sounding better than I am. Miri, it's become a sensitive time in the Middle East. It's so incredible. There was such a joy just some time ago, and now it seems like we're on a knife edge, seeing which way the ceasefire will go. Hamas attacking the IDF, or their proxies at least, killing two soldiers and wounding three. A response by the IDF targeting Hamas infrastructure, as well as strikes in Lebanon. Given your IDF intelligence experience, how do you assess the recent escalations?
I think that what we're seeing here is the gap that for you and me is a gap between what we think a ceasefire is and what a ceasefire is. This is not the end of the war, and this certainly is not peace. And to me, everything that's happening now is part of the ceasefire. It's not outside of that. Hamas is trying to define rules of the game in its own way, and we're not going to let them. But that's part of the ceasefire, meaning they want to see if we really mean it when we say that yellow line that was drawn on the map. So we actually have to physically now go and put big concrete lines inside the Gaza Strip that were not there before to show them exactly what we mean. They're going to try to poke us. They're going to try to hit us. Hamas has not disappeared. But all of this is within the ceasefire, because the second thing that they're doing at the same time is they're trickling in the bodies of the hostages, and that's part of the first stage, and they're supposed to bring them back. So they're not bringing them back. They're just doing it very slowly. I had expectations of this being just like this. It isn't feeling nice. I didn't expect it to feel nice. And I'm so glad that the 20 are home. And I'm so happy that slowly the different bodies are also coming back. But this is what a ceasefire looks like. It's not the end of the war, and it's certainly not peace.
Maybe I'm trying to get my head around what's actually happening here in this three-dimensional chess game. You've got the Israeli hostages back. Thank goodness for that. I mean, that's a game changer. Just right there. That surely allows Israel a certain freedom of action in Gaza that they haven't had for the past 2 years. So I don't understand what trump card it is that Hamas thinks they still have to play.
So here it's the opposite side of how Hamas view it and how us, I want to say rational, because they have their own rationale that I think is horrible, but in their rationale, in the Hamas rationale, holding the 20 was bringing Israel together, not tearing Israel apart, meaning there was actually, from the prime minister in all of the different opposition, there was no question inside Israel that everybody needed the 20 live people to come back alive, that it would have been devastating here if one of them would have died, and in that sense, there was an interest here to bring them back. And I think that to a large degree, Hamas understood that on that one, we would go all out to do so. And in its own way, once they've given back those 20, are we going to go all out for the bodies? Now, the bodies are important. I don't want for a moment to belittle that. My heart is with the families. But I think we all understand deep down that it's not the same alive person, and thank God they're back, and the dead bodies. And in that sense, what's happening now is that Hamas is seeing how they can slowly take this, and this prolongs this whole stage. Anything that prolongs the discussion in Israel, anything that makes you ask, you and me, have the discussion and ask this question, that helps Hamas, not Israel. Hamas wants to show it as if that they, again, that they're the victim, they're the one that's not being allowed to do things. We need to differentiate between the Palestinians, and yes, Hamas is Palestinian, but between the Palestinians, 2 million people in the Gaza Strip, and between Hamas, the terror army, that are tens of thousands of people, but they're not millions of people. And in that distinction there, I think that what Hamas want to achieve is to try as much as possible to poke Israel, to try to delegitimize any of Israel's actions, hiding behind their civilian cover because they're a terror army. And so, yes, for them, it was more beneficial to give back the live ones and now to be very sticky and harsh with the additional additional bodies that, again, they kidnapped, killed, murdered, and kidnapped on October 7th. And one of them is from 11 years ago. This isn't something new, the modus operandi. Exactly. And so when we look at that, I know it's so hard, and I'm not saying nice and easy things, but in the logic of what's going on right now, for you to come to Israel, can we do anything we want right now? We got the 20 live ones back. Do we want now to go all out, A, because of the dead ones, or because of the little minor aspects? I'm saying that's part of the game that Hamas is playing. And at the end, I live here, and we want to have an economy, and we also would like to go back to a more normal, abnormal, not just the Gaza Strip. And as such, I don't see Israel right now taking a step and going all out against Hamas in this situation.
You know, I read an article, I think it was by Ahmed Segal, talking about the agreement as to where the new yellow line border would be. And his article stated that, in his opinion, it would become almost a line that split the strip into the Israeli-controlled strip versus a Hamas-controlled strip, and that they would allow civilians fleeing Hamas to come into the Israeli zone, feed them, take care of them, etc. And then almost by population transfer, that's the wrong word to use, transfer, but people having somewhere to flee, they then could take the necessary action against Hamas if it came to that. Do you think there's something to what Amit Segal is saying, or do you think that's not the case?
Amit Segal, usually in those sort of depictions, is very much talking through the prime minister, the prime minister's office, and that means that what you're hearing there is kind of what I'm going to call floating something out there, having you and me talk about it to see how we respond to it. So the first thing is that what he wrote inside there is that Hamas would be the ruler in the area within the yellow line.
Yes.
Really? This government, after everything that they said in the last 2 years, is going to accept that Hamas are still ruling there? I want to put that with a really big question mark. And the second aspect is that the bulk of the people, the 2 million people that live in the Gaza Strip, we're not controlling people in the Gaza Strip almost at all right now. If people would look at the maps in that yellow line, the bulk of the population now are not under our control. We've moved away from that. The Gaza Strip is not entirely built up. And in those lines themselves, what that would mean is really people would have to up and leave where they live to be able to come in. No, I don't see that as feasible. And I want to add in an additional aspect that we always tend to forget. Not only is Israel in the Gaza Strip, and we control up to that yellow line, and we redeployed into that yellow line in the last week, but there is an additional force or country that borders the Gaza Strip, and that's Egypt. And right now, Israeli troops are still along what I'm going to call Gaza Strip Egyptian border, because we went all the way to the sea there. That's the Rafah line. And in the second stage, we're actually supposed to leave that now. And that, to me, today, the Egyptian, I think the term is the Minister of Intelligence. The Egyptian Minister of Intelligence came to Israel today. The Prime Minister's office put out an official communique that the Prime Minister of Israel met the top Egyptian official, meaning there are additional things that are going on that very much impact the Gaza Strip. I do not see the Gaza Strip's future in being even smaller than it was before, where people are trying to flee the Hamas. I don't see that as a feasible future. And not only that, but the Arab countries around us, certainly Egypt and Jordan and the other, I don't like the term moderate, but Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Bahrain, and other Muslim countries not from the Middle East, have all stated clearly that Hamas should not rule. Hamas has said that they don't want to rule. So it's taking a deep breath and understanding that somebody else is going to rule there. They're probably going to be Palestinian. That doesn't make it a happily ever after, but that's way better than Hamas ruling in the way that it is now.
That's interesting that you see it through that lens. It seems to me that they're making a very hard fight to remain armed and to have some kind of a say in a new government. And then I see that they're kind of going to be bolstered by the Turks and the Qataris, and that to me is really a place for concern.
I'm agreeing.
It's being downplayed.
No, but you said two different things. Okay, because you said disarmed. I said that they don't want to rule. I did not say that they want to disarm. That is absolutely not the same thing. And I'm completely agreeing with you. They don't want to disarm, but they do not want the responsibility. They want the authority. They want to be the resistance. They want to bear arms, but they don't actually want to be the ones who, for example, have to rebuild, do the debris, build a sewage system, build a water system. That's boring. That's not resistance. And the resistance is about Palestine as an independent Muslim entity, and that's what Hamas wants. So they're more than happy for somebody else to come step in and do all of that boring, mundane leadership, authority, construction. They're more than happy for that as long as they're not disarmed. And the big question in that case is really within the areas that we've left now, and that's up to that yellow line. And in that, I understand the distinction of the yellow line. Who will disarm them? And I think that what Israel is saying and what they're saying right now is if nobody disarms them, then what's going to happen is Hamas will rule there. But I have not yet in that sense ruled out the possibility that somebody else will come in to rule. And yet Hamas doesn't disarm. That's not a good scenario, but it's actually to me, for me, Miri, better than just Hamas being there, because for Israel to border chaos is very negative. I prefer somebody I don't like who's ruling there, even with Hamas, because Hamas still exists. But for nobody to be ruling there, that chaos is very bad news for whoever borders that, and that's Israel and Egypt.
Yeah, it's just quite a strategic land point for an Islamist Turkish expansion. It's a very interesting foe to hold them for. And that's what concerns me. And then the next question I was going to ask you was about the Egyptian buildup in the Sinai that seems to have just been happening progressively, apparently for good reason. To what extent does that now tie in with the Turkish and Qatari expansion into the area? And surely those three need to be seen as a threat.
So let's be very clear. Qatar are the world backer of the Muslim Brotherhood, which was founded in Egypt over 100 years ago. But I'm saying that because Turkey, under Erdogan, Erdogan's political party is what I'm going to call a Turkish version of Muslim Brotherhood, because Muslim Brotherhood is nationally based. So the Turkish version is not the same as the Syrian version, which is not the same as the original Egyptian pan-Arabic, pan-Islamic version. And each one has its own honing. So what Turkey wants is not exactly the same as Qatar, but both of them are very Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas, its official full name, is the Palestine chapter of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. Hello. To be clear to all our listeners, Egypt views the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt as a terror organization. Did I just make it that much more complex? So Egypt is against the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's a country, Egypt, of 110 million people. Yeah. Hamas views itself completely as Muslim Brotherhood. Egypt is very wary of Qatar, of Turkey. But at the end, you live in regional geopolitics. I'm talking to you now inside South Africa. We understand that countries and nationals and your own governments can do actions that you approve or disapprove. And in this case, we're not talking about democracy. Egypt is not a democracy, neither is Turkey, nor is Qatar. And all of them have a lot of impact, but none of them are in the Gaza Strip right now. Egypt's military buildup inside Sinai, which has been gradual, is something that's been done with Israel very much seeing it. We have a treaty with them. This is something that we discuss. As I said before, the Egyptian minister comes and talks directly with the Israeli prime minister. This isn't, you know, we don't talk directly in the same way with Qatar. And we have a horrible relationship with Turkey right now. When it comes to Egypt, I am not worried that the Egyptians are about to attack Israel. That's not that. 110 million hungry people in Egypt, the solution to that is not an attacking Israel. I think that they're much more worried about the impact of Hamas's Muslim Brotherhood and how that impacts inside Egypt. Egypt itself, over a decade ago, in the transitions that went on there, for those who remember when Mubarak was ousted, arrested, put in jail, he had been president for 30 years, Muslim Brotherhood was a terror organization. And the Egyptians chose, as a people, the Muslim Brotherhood parties to be the ones who would rule in Egypt. And President Assisi, the present president in Egypt, I never know how to say this on the radio without sounding so negative, but at the end, he did a military coup. You know, what the people chose in Egypt was the Muslim Brotherhood, not President Assisi. And so this complex arena that we live in, you have to know how to go in between them. I'm so wary of being against all Muslims, of course. I'm certainly not against all Muslims. I'm not even necessarily against Muslim Brotherhood as Muslim Brotherhood. It doesn't put the annihilation of Israel as the number one element. Having said that, the Muslim Brotherhood actions, certainly under Hamas, have become very extreme, very violent, very harsh, and very scary. So yes, we need to look out at Qatar, at Turkey, at Muslim Brotherhood, and we need to see what Egypt is doing for that. That doesn't make Egypt our best friend, but it's a strategic peace treaty that we have with Egypt. It's been here for 45 years. Not a lot of things last. It's lasted through this war and other wars, and I think it continues to be a strategic interest for the Egyptian leadership. I'm not sure about the Egyptian people.
Mary, we're going to leave it there this afternoon. We're out of time. Feel better. Thank you for chatting to me.